This is the Fantasy Focus Books and Authors Podcast, Episode 4. Good day and welcome to this episode of the Fantasy Focus Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what the title says it is, a show focused on everything in fantasy books. Whether it's epic fantasy, urban fantasy, swords and sorcery, or anything else in between, expect to find the best and brightest authors from all the various corners of the fantasy book world here on the show. Plus, we're going to add in a few other special guests along the way, so stay tuned. First, a quick update on my current projects and things I'm doing. As most of you listen to this, if you're listening to it right after it came out, I'm going to be on my way to Austin, Texas, where I'll be attending the Smarter Artists Summit. I'm looking forward to hanging out there with a bunch of my favorite fellow authors. So if you're in the Austin, Texas area, you want to reach out and check out my Facebook or Twitter page, you might see out where I'm out and about, and maybe, who knows, I might be convinced to go out and do some kind of a meetup one night while I'm there. Also, as always, if you're interested in more information, you can find out more about what I'm doing over at my fan group on Facebook. That can be found at Jamie's Fun Fantasy Superfans, and also the related Facebook author page, as well as my website and blog, jamiedavisbooks.com. All right, enough about me. Let's go ahead and get into our special guest for this episode. Today, I am super excited to be joined by Rosemary A. Johns, author of the Rebel Angels series. Rosemary is a USA Today best-selling and award-winning author with numerous books across her related Rebels series. There's a couple of different series in that group. And Rosemary writes things about sexy angels, savage vampires, and epic battles. And we'll talk more about that in this episode. So here's my chat with Rosemary. Rosemary, welcome to the Fantasy Focus podcast. It's great to have you on the show. And why don't you start off by telling everybody a little bit about yourself?
Okay, thank you. It's great to be here. So I'm Rosemary A. Johns, and I'm a fantasy author. I'm a USA Today bestselling author. I have two main series, Rebel Vampires and Rebel Angels. And I tend to love to write about anti-heroes and British anti-heroes. And I don't tend to mind whether they're angels or vampires, as long as they've got a rebel at the heart.
And it shows. I've just started your first book in the Rebel Angels series, which is really fun.
Oh, good.
And you're right. Really, really not like your typical hero. She's not nice all the time.
No, she's an anti-heroine. Yeah.
What draws you to that kind of character?
Well, I was a playwright before. I wrote short stories and I wrote plays. And I was always drawn to the character that was not the hero and not the villain, but that character who was in that kind of grey area in between. And I'd always find when I watch plays that I'd be drawn to usually not the main character, but the one who was very morally conflicted, the complex character, and what the kind of redemptive arc that they'd then go on from at the beginning, maybe not really acting as they should do, and then what changed them. So someone who went on a really big journey. And when I was younger, I loved Heathcliff from Wuthering Heights. That was a formative book for me. And I love beautiful monsters, so characters like Lestat, for example, characters that knew they were monsters but kind of tried to work out their humanity anyway. So I was always really drawn to these complex characters. So characters that weren't villains, but characters that weren't heroes. I found heroes pretty boring and obvious. And when I came to decide that I was going to write novels, I knew that I wanted to write anti-heroes, but also anti-heroes that would go on quite a big journey of discovery for themselves and would be challenged. And I found that there weren't that many anti-heroines who were genuine anti-heroines. And that was something I wanted to do in Rebel Angels. And I wanted to do it with a British vampire, which was what my first series was. And I wanted to have them as a main character. I didn't want them to be the love interest. I didn't want them to be the comedy sidekick. I wanted them the main character, and I wanted them to be an anti-hero, and I wanted them to have that sort of moral ambiguity around them. But then I wanted to do it for the anti-heroine as well, because I think it's really important that we have a whole range of characters. But the rebel is something that's I'm quite a rebel, but a rebel that isn't, that explores that it, being rebellious isn't simply about anarchy. Being rebellious is about challenging something.
And, you know, I find in my writing, too, that those characters are really hard sometimes to wrap your head around, because it you really have to dig into their motivation to understand that what they're going to do next.
And I mean, that you've hit the nail on the head in the sense that whenever you write a character like this, everything comes down to the motivation. And I used to act as well. And it was basically looking for that little bit of gold. And the gold was, what was their motivation? So you could play the darkest character, but if you could find what their core motivation was, you could make the audience love them. So whenever you watch a film or you go to a play and you think, how did they just make that character who I should have hated, but I sympathize with them and I love them. I call it kind of the Loki effect. Because if you look at those films, it was, why does everyone love Loki? So he does that brilliantly, and the way that part is written does it brilliantly, because you look at the motivation behind it, and it's not simply about the villain. It is about the things that humanizes it for everybody. So a character that I hope I'm not doing any spoilers here, but discovers that they're adopted, or a character that still has love or loves their family. And if that is their core and that is their core motivation, they can still be even a villain, let alone an anti-hero. So it's all about finding what their motivation is, and finding that little core of gold that you can put right there at their heart as a character. And with Violet, she has, who is the main character in my Rebel Angel series, she has been, I won't give spoilers, so I'll be careful, but she discovers that she isn't human, which she thought she was, but she's been raised in a children's home. She has huge abandonment issues. She has no parents. She has huge trust issues with the way she's been treated by men. She's had a hard life anyway. She's from a very rough part of London, so she's already got that as a background. But on the other hand, she creates around herself her own family, and in that love for that family and the extreme lengths that she'll go to save them as the series goes on, and what she'll sacrifice and what she'll give up and what she'll battle to save them, as well as her snarky sense of humor as well, and her bravery and her courage. That's what you find to love. And that's what a reader will come to love about her. The fact that she has these other sides to her nature, which, because she's not human, are darker, doesn't matter when she has those core parts of her that we can also all identify. Because what I've just described, her wanting to find her parents, her being desperate to find acceptance, to not be viewed as different when she's felt different all her life, her feeling potentially the misfit. These are all things that we can all identify with, despite the fact that we're talking about a book that has vampires and angels in it.
And it's interesting because you also explore a little bit about what it means to be family, because it's not just about blood relation, but that family can be something, you know, something you create rather than something that is just there for you.
That's a really important theme in what I write, and is something that's really important to me. That for Violet, that's probably her most important thing, and something that she comes to discover as it goes along, and the nature of that. And readers have, that's affected quite a lot of readers, and that's something that a lot of readers have identified with. But that, that's also a theme that I come back to in Rebel Vampires. That's a theme where, as a Bloodlifer, which is the name for the vampires in Rebel Vampires, he feels very bound to the ones that elect him into Bloodlife. That's the vampires, essentially, that turn him into vampires. So he has almost like a second family, the human family, the Bloodlife family, but he feels that he should stay with that family. And he discovers that actually he can create a new family by leaving them. But the difficulty of doing that and whether he can do that is sort of worked out in that series. And in my second series, this concept of family isn't about necessarily blood, it isn't about biological, it's something that you can choose, it's something that you can sacrifice for, it's something you can fight for, it's even something that you can choose to die for, but it's also something you can choose to walk away from if you need to, and if it's toxic to you, and that includes biological. So it's got some pretty meaty big themes going alongside the adventure. Yeah.
You know, I touch on a lot of those subjects in my Accidental Champion series, where the character feels betrayed by her family, who've hidden a fantastical world from her that she didn't know existed. And it's about her then finding a family of her own in that world, because she's left her other family behind. And it's a challenge. And one of the things that I find is that it's balancing heavy themes like that while keeping the story moving so that people don't feel like you're hitting them over the head with it, right?
Well, I think it's about not mentioning it. Not how can I say not mentioning it? I think it's about writing it simply within what's occurring. So, I plot a lot. I mean, I write very seriously, plot as it goes, and I write. The constant thing I think about is propulsion, because I've also written sort of screenplays. So, and in that, the chief thing you think about is propulsion. So how is this moving it forward? Everything you write is moving it forward in some way, emotionally or with action. And it's the same when you're thinking about themes. So I constantly think about the theme of what I'm writing, but within that, it has to be moving it forward. So these things are going on, but it's going on within the plot. So the plot might be that this is happening, but I don't think that at any point it's stopped particularly. She has a sentence that fam is fam. That's like her thing. Fam being family in London talk. but beyond that sentence, it's simply what's occurring as she essentially goes on and discovers that. I don't want to get, as I said, can't give spoilers because there's a lot of twists and turns in the story. But the twists and turns of the story are what show you this theme, as opposed to at any point there being any long soliloquies on it or huge description. And I think that's true of how I set about writing anything. I'm constantly thinking of how is it propelling it forward for the reader.
Yeah, you mentioned the difference in between writing screenplays and writing novels is different, and yet it's important to bring some of that brevity of every word counts so much more in a screenplay than a novel. And I don't mean that there should be extra words in a novel, but you have more freedom to be more expressive in a novel, whereas you have to, in my experience, I've worked with a screenwriter on one of my books, and I was driven by the way they described things differently in the screenplay than what it would be in my book. And I think it shows in your writing too, because I can see that brevity of, you know, that, like you said, having to propel it forward, everything has to keep things moving.
Mm. And it's so visual. You're always thinking, how am I going to show, not tell, but to a really extreme degree. In a novel, it's really fun to be able to use the beauty of words as well as a visual. But it's actually really nice for me because I see what I'm writing happening as a movie inside my head, very much so. And then I'm writing it down. So I see things in a very, very visual way, and I always have done. So there's a mixture of me literally seeing it, but then also thinking in a very craft way. How am I going to be translating it down? But I do have a very distinctive voice, and I think that that's probably because I write in a range of mediums as well. But I think that I enjoy bringing some of the things that I've learned from other mediums into writing the novel.
So, why urban fantasy for your choice of genres? Why not epic fantasy or science fiction or some other area of fantasy subgenre even?
Well, I used to write. It's quite a long path to it, but I will be brief. So when I was 14, I had my first, in fact, sci-fi short story professionally published. My parents were amazingly supportive, and they sent it off as if I was an adult. So I kind of, that's when my short stories first started, and they were in fantasy and they were in sci-fi. And then I was also published in dark fiction. So I've had dark fiction published, which I also really enjoy. My plays and other stuff was psychological and was contemporary and wasn't. And I've also written historical fiction. So I have written across a range of things. And in fact, the first novel that was possibly going to be done and possibly going to be done traditional was actually historical. And then I simply decided that I didn't want to write historical for the rest of my writing career. And I had a very long think about what I would really enjoy doing for the rest of my career and what was my favorite genre to write that I could write subversively in. So by that I really mean how I could write. So in theatre, you kind of challenge in the plays that you write things as simple as money can make you happy, or money does make you happy, or disabled people can't be successful, or your older people are boring. You know, just these little kind of lies. And I wanted to find a genre which kind of juxtaposed humans with non-human, which urban fantasy does, and is a really fantastic one for holding up kind of the mirror, but without moralizing in any way. It just does it without you actually having to say anything. Because I don't like books that tell you should think this or you shouldn't think this. I like books that just make you think. And so when I really thought, what could I write that I felt there was hadn't yet been really written yet, that had a niche where I could do that in, that I would happily write for the rest of my days, I realized that there wasn't a ultimate British anti-hero vampire. And that's what I wanted to do. And that's why I created Light and the Bloodlife world of Rebel Vampires. And that's what I then wanted to do the equivalent of with Violet. And I felt that there was a place for a British voice to do that. And it was happening at the time where the Brexit vote was first happening. It feels a long time ago now. And I write about freedom and choice and difference. And I wanted to have I love all of fantasy. I'll just put that out there. And I've written, as I said, across a range of it. But I felt that urban fantasy just by juxtaposing the different worlds just gave me more of an opportunity to talk about humanity.
You mentioned Brexit and how you brought that theme a little bit into your book. And you also mentioned in the information I got from you up front was that you really love music and theater and film. And I'm curious, you know, how those other aspects of things that you enjoy that are so creative in and of themselves, how that type of influence comes into your writing in some way.
I mean, I'm a total music fanatic, and I always have been. And I am so impressed with musicians and people in bands and people who do that, because That's one thing I can't do at all. I have a cousin in a band, and it always blows me away. But I absolutely adore music. In my books, Light is a massive music fan. And if there's a kind of a soundtrack through both my books, because music, I think music is massively evocative. And in Rebel Vampires, a relatively large section is set in the 1960s. Rolling Stones and Kinks and it's Clash. And it's really important. And similarly, there are songs like Eels, for example. Eels is actually a very important band in Rebel Angels. And you don't need to know anything about the music to understand its significance within the books. But that's how it sort of influences. It also influences with me with when I'm writing. But I find that you very often creative people are drawn to different mediums of being creative, and that it inspires. And I also find that the different, so lyrics, for example, will often spark something for me. And if I'm watching a movie, a particular scene, or the way that it's shot will, or even just a dynamic between the way two characters are, it can be a way that they look or a way that they're blocked. So like in theatre, the way that you're blocked is, say one character is really dominantly standing over another character, and it really works, and it's something that's unexpected, that will just click in my head and make me think, that is really interesting. Why is that really interesting? And I think about it. So it's really important to me, partly because it was my background, but it's also important to me because it continues to be inspiration, and it is always sparking something. But I think that's true probably for a lot of creative people.
Do you listen to music while you write?
I have two modes. I'm really intensely into a scene, and I literally have like soundproof like ear things, headphones that I put on, soundproofing ones. Even if I'm alone in the house, I put these on because I'm that intensely into what I'm writing. Or if a scene has music in it. So if you know that this scene, so they're in the underworld, there's a book called Vampire Devil in the Rebel Angel series, and it's set in the underworld, which is not going to be what anyone expects the underworld to be, so I'm not going to spoil it, but it's set in my version of the underworld where the vampires are. And they're kind of punk vampires-ish, and they certainly like punk music, and they're kind of anarchic, and it's got a really, they like having parties with very British punk music. So when there's a scene that has that music on, I will have listened to that music over and over and over while I was writing it. So yes, whenever I've been writing a scene with it, I'm getting down to whatever music the characters are, or if there's a really poignant scene and there's music that certain characters share, again, I'll have had that music on. And there's actually some readers that have said that they've listened to the soundtrack along with the book, and how much it's meant to them to be able to do that, which is actually lovely because they've been doing what I've been doing. I think it must be important music, because the first series and the second series have actually inspired two different rock songs called, and I'm going to forget, Tim Black, rock singer in America. So I think there's a close connection between music and the series.
That's awesome. That's really exciting. I know when I write, it's I need noise in the background, but I don't necessarily want organized noise. So I tend to put the TV on the news and turn it down a little bit, just so there's like this murmur. For my first draft. But when I edit that first draft, I have a playlist I create that I try to create the mood of the scene or the book in general or specific scenes sometimes, just to put me in the frame of mind for that. Mm. So that's interesting that, you know, I can see exactly what you mean by listening to this music over and over again while you're writing something.
Mm.
So you talked a little bit about, you know, fans reaching out to you and saying, hey, I listened to the music too while I was reading it and it was really powerful. How's the way you prefer communicating with your fans? Where do you hear from them the most?
I have a newsletter that goes out every week. I get a lot of responses to my newsletter, which is really lovely. And I get a lot of emails from fans, which is also lovely. I have an amazing set of rebels. They're called Rosemary's Rebels, who are that's a fan group and a street team.
By the way, that's an awesome name for a fan lot. Group, by the way. Just wanted to say.
Rosemary's Rebels. I know. And then basically they're known as my readers and my fans are called known as my rebels. And I have to do a shout out to them because they are so awesome and supportive. And it's been one of the nicest experiences of moving to being a novelist is having that. So yeah, shout out to them, shout out to the rebels. But yeah, I get a lot of messages on Facebook. And also people do things like they post fan art. So there's a lot of really nice fan art. And then they tag me into it on Facebook. So yeah, I think through the group on Facebook, but also through the newsletter, but I get sent quite a lot of messages through my email as well. But also I have a contact form on I have a blog, rosemaryajohns.com, and a website, and there's a contact form on there, and I get contacted through that quite a lot. But it's absolutely lovely. I always love hearing from people. Even if it's just say hi and they enjoyed it. So yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it is something different to just kind of hear back from somebody. That was one of the things that was a very pleasant surprise when I first released my first book out there and heard back from somebody. And they actually had mentioned that they picked up on a theme that I had kind of tried to work into the book. And it made me feel good that you know, it's nice to know that your words work, right?
Absolutely.
So you've got these two series out there. You're wrapping up the fifth book's out for pre-order now for Rebel Angels. What do you have on the back burner right now? What's coming up?
So yeah, Vampire God, which is like the grand finale of Rebel Angels, comes out on the 28th of March. So I'm kind of getting that all ready for that, you know, for the end of Rebel Angels. So that's really exciting. And then in autumn, I have a new series, which is a spin-off of Rebel Angels, but separate to it, but set within. So the two Rebel series are called the Rebelverse. They're set within essentially the same world. So I have a new series set within that world, but separate, which I'm excited about. And I can't say too much because I don't want to give it away, but it is exciting. And I can say that it's going to be werewolves, which,
ooh.
Yeah. And I've been planning this and excited about writing this since before I started writing Rebel Angels. So yeah, I'm very excited.
That was something that, you know, I constantly have the next project in the back of my mind. And it's hard because you're excited about that, but you've got something else you need to finish as well that you're also excited about. But it's that new shiny thing kind of in the background.
Yes, exactly. That you're constantly writing notes on. Mm-hmm. So you have like, I've huge numbers of books where they're just filled with notes on the next series. And then usually about three or four series ahead of that as well. Of ideas and characters and settings and scenes, and I'm like that. So I have half ideas of sometimes even just, as I said, a look or a half look or an emotion or something, or as I said, a setting that would be awesome in the next series. So yeah, I'm at that stage with the next series, and I'm at the polishing stage for Vampire God.
Now, I noticed you bring your books out pretty quickly together, close to back. You know, a few months apart. And that's got to be exciting for your readers. How many books do you have planned for 2019?
So we had Vampire Mage that has pretty much just come out. It was beginning of January. And then we have 28th of March, we have Vampire God. Then there's a bit of a break because we have, it's not coming out till autumn, the next one. And then there will be three books. That's a trilogy.
So you've got that coming out. You know, those three books will come out before the end of the year or somewhere around that time frame?
Fingers crossed, should do, yes.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Fingers crossed. Life tries to get in the way, doesn't it?
Yes. But yeah, theoretically, that trilogy should come out between autumn and the end of the year. Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's about the right pace for readers or what readers like, but it's not so much that it's risking burnout. I think it's about the right pace.
I think, you know, every writer needs to find their own pace that works with them and their readers. It's kind of a partnership, don't you think?
It is. And also different genres within fantasy have a different level for readership, that how fast they like books to come to them. So again, it's finding what works for that, and it's finding what works for you as a writer. So
you mentioned your website. Do you want to talk a little bit, just real briefly, about where people can find you on social media as well, like Facebook? I know you have your Facebook group and your author page and stuff.
So I'm Rosemary Ann Johns on Facebook. I'm Rosemary A. Johns on Twitter. I'm rosemaryajohns.com for my blog and my website. And if you look on my website, you can find, I think it's under Become a Rebel, but there's a place on there where you can sign up for my newsletter. And on my newsletter, you get a free novella, but also most importantly, it tells you when my releases are coming out, when I'm doing exciting events, and you can just, you know, find out what's going on with me.
Excellent. Well, we'll make sure we have links to all of that in the notes for this episode. So everybody should make sure they head over to fantasy-focus.com and check the podcast tab there for this episode. And you'll find links to Rosemary, to her Facebook page and her website and everything else. Rosemary, thanks so much for coming on. It's been great chatting with you. When your next series is ready to come out in the fall, please reach out to me and we can have you back on the show.
That would be great. Thank you.
That will wrap up this episode of the Fantasy Focus podcast. Make sure you catch up with us for a whole lot more from the Fantasy Focus community on both Facebook and over at fantasy-focus.com. If you're over there, make sure you leave a comment on this episode on either place and let me know what's on your mind. Also, on the website, you'll find the podcast episode post, and there's some good stuff there, like links to subscribe to the show on your favorite mobile app or device. So you can sign up there to get subscribed via iOS, an Android app, or even by email. So make sure you do that and don't miss any of the episodes. You'll even find us on apps like Stitcher and TuneIn. We have some pretty awesome authors coming up, so you'll definitely want to subscribe. We've got people like Charles Phipps, Ellie Modesitt, Kevin J. Anderson, Adrian Tchaikovsky, and Anthony Ryan, just to name a few. Anyway, I'm going to wrap up this episode of the Fantasy Focus podcast, reminding you, as always, that I'm your host, Jamie Davis, author of Fun Fantasy Reads. Please don't forget to follow me over on Facebook at Jamie Davis Books and at my website, jamiedavisbooks.com, where you can get a free book just for signing up for my email newsletter while you're over there. Whatever you do, though, make sure you subscribe and come back here for the next podcast. We've got some great stuff coming for you. In the meantime, I do want to make sure you remember to keep your eyes open, folks, because there's magic all around you.